Okay, today I have, this is my book, here it is. All right. A lot of the stuff I'm going to tell you today comes from the Kitzur Halachos by Rav Zev Hofstetter. I'm assuming that he's a relative, probably a nephew of David, the famous David Hofstetter, the founder, the Nasi of Dirshu. And he has, he has someone in his family. I'm assuming it's the same family. I don't know how many Hofstetters are there that wrote already many, many, many volumes on halacha, and they're all excellent. Really super, super thorough, super practical, and clear, insightful. They're really, really, really good. I really enjoy his sarm. And I wanted to discuss today some of the basic laws of Shofar. Of the Kiyas Shofar. So let me go to my private notes. Okay, we'll go to some basic things. And we'll mix in as we go along. We'll mix in some of my nonsense. First thing is, what kind of Shofar do you use? Lechatchila, you're supposed to use a Shofar shel ayil, of a ram. If I'm not mistaken, today nobody uses a Shofar shel ayil because of practical considerations. The shofar that they're using in shul, in every shul, if I'm not mistaken, it's not an ayil. It's not an ayil. Why not? It could be they don't. It's not so easy to blow the shofar of an ayil. The sound that comes out is not so great, and it's just, I don't know the exact details, but it's very not practical. It's not pragmatic to use today in the modern world. The Shofar Shel Ayil. Certainly there must be some people who use it, but the best of my knowledge is that we do not use it today, but that's not the ideal. The ideal thing to use is a ram. An ayil, why? L'zecher, the Eloi Shel Yitzchak. The Avodas Hayom of Rosh Hashanah is to remember the Akedah. At the end of the Akedah, the Malach says to Avram, Al Tishlach Yodach L'Navi Al Tasla Mu'uma, Ki Ata Yodati, Ki Yirei L'Kim Ata V'Lechosach, Tzvinuchos Tichitcha, Mimeni, and then it goes on to say, Vayisina Vayar Vihinei Ayil. There was an Ayil. Ayil Achar Nechas Basfach. Avram, he took the Ayil, Vayaleu Le'oila Tachas Benoi. And he offered the Ayil in the place of his son. Chazal tell us, the Shofar Shel Ayil as a zecher for the Akedah, it should be a zuchus for Klal Yisrael. And therefore, if you can, and I told you today, it's not done. The best of my knowledge is that today most people do not use a Shofar Shel Ayil because it's just not practical for various reasons. But if you can use a Shofar Shel Ayil, that would be ideal. And not only would it be ideal, it would be ideal if you can use the right horn. The right horn of the ayil, because why? Because it says by Mashiach, V'hoya b'yamu yitoka b'shofar gadol. The shofar gadol means the larger of the two. An ayil has two horns, obviously, one on the left, one on the right. The one on the right, I'm assuming right means when the ayil is facing forwards, is larger than the one on the left. That's the way Hashem made it, that one horn is larger than the other. That's the way it's, and therefore, the Shofar Gadol doesn't just mean a large horn. It means the larger of the two. And the larger of the two on a healthy ayil is the right horn. These are all super duper over the top hidurim, which probably no one does, because it's just not practical to do this. We use the halacha me'ikar hadin, you can use the horn of any kosher animal. Any kosher animal is fit for the blowing of a shofar. That's fine, and it does not have to have a kosher shechita. Even if the animal is in the veil, it died by itself, or was a treifa, there was a major defect, it doesn't matter, as long as the shofar comes from a kosher animal, that is sufficient. If the shofar,
a buffalo horn.
So that's you're asking a very good question. There's no tradition as to the kashrus of a buffalo. Do people today eat buffalo meat? Is there such a thing today?
Years ago.
Yes, but it's sold it for a while, but it wasn't working out. Not enough people.
Didn't taste good.
Okay,
you're asking the Shiloh of the Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is coming around.
You can't use a cow, Rabbi. You can't use a cow.
No, not that.
It's not going to make a sin. No, there's another rule. There are more conditions that have to be met. We'll come to one thing at a time. It's a keren. It does not have a. It has to be naturally hollow. There's another condition. A shofar by it comes from literally the word shofar comes from the word. I forgot the exact word. It means a tube, a hollow tube. Some animals have horns, but the horn is complete cartilage. It's not naturally hollow. That is not called a shofar. That is called a keren. Any horn of a kosher animal that is pure cartilage, does not have a natural hollow component, cannot be used, is not kosher for a shofar. It has to be hollow. So there are a limited number of animals, kosher animals, that have horns that are naturally hollow. And that fits into the word shofar. Next condition is that it should be bent. The shofar should be naturally bent. Why? Because I don't know if it's a pasuk or if it's a chazal. We want to remind us to humble ourselves. That when we blow the shofar, we should bend ourselves spiritually in our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We should be kafuf to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's look at all the conditions we have so far. Number one, it has to come from a kosher animal. You don't need the animal to have a kosher shechita or the animal to have been a healthy animal. Number two, the shofar has to be hollow. Number three, it should be lechatchil gzunt, it should be bent. It should have a natural bend to it. Okay, and that's really it. So any animal, those are really the three conditions. So any shofar that fits those conditions is lechatchila kosher to use as a shofar. Today there are
certain. You see in the stores, the Sephardi shofars are very long and straight.
No, they're round. The ones that they use, they're not straight. They curl. They curl.
I've seen plenty of shofars that are just ones exactly
straight.
Totally straight.
They're not supposed to be used because it says in Shulchan. That's not what it says in Shulchan. It has to be kafah.
I understand, but I'm just saying what I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's another thing which is again this year. It's a very interesting thing that this is very relevant this year, Corona. That when you blow the shofar, you're supposed to hold the shofar called derech giduloi. The same way the shofar is positioned on the head of the animal. Everything in halach is like that. The kroshim in the Beis Hamikdash. If you were to build a structure, think about this. If you were to build a structure in the Beis Hamikdash, how would you build the structure? The way we have it in the picture books, in the Torah, with the Kerashim standing straight up? Who didn't play with a log house when they were a child? When you build a home with logs, with beams of wood, you don't put the beams standing straight up. When you build a log house, everyone here once upon a time played with a toy log house. The beams, when you chop down trees and you build a house out of logs, you put them down, horizontal, not vertical. So how come the Mishkan is built in this very bizarre way with the beams are standing straight up? That's not how you do construction. No one, no engineer, no structural engineer would even fathom to build the Mishkan the way it's presented in the Torah. It's absurd. Take any structural engineer, give him the building materials and tell him to put up a Mishkan. The first thing he's going to do is he's going to lie down the Kerashim flat, horizontal. No one's going to make a Mishkan with the beams atzei shitim oimdim. What's going on? So the answer is gzeres hakasuf. And obviously there's a lot of depth in what it means in the world of Machshava. But there's a halachic principle as well. Everything in the Beis HaMikdash or in service of Hashem is supposed to be performed the way they naturally come into this world. Derech Giduloi. the Mishkan, if you're going to use beams, forget about all of the Kabbalah and the Machshava and all of the ideas of what it means. Atzei Shitim Oimdim. The fact that a beam comes out of the ground, going straight up, that's called Derech Giduloi, the way it grows. If you're going to use this beam as an object in your structure, the beam should be the way it grew, standing, not horizontal. Okay, that's like a very bare bones basic shot why the Mishkan has to be the beams standing, because it's Derech Giduloi. When it comes to the mitzvah of shofar, it's the same thing. You're supposed to hold the shofar straight. You put the shofar in your mouth. We'll talk about where in your mouth. You put the shofar and you hold it. And the top of the shofar is supposed to extend upwards or to the side. Like basically the way it appears when you look at an animal. Picture the shofar coming out of the head of an animal. It comes out and goes up or goes to the side. It doesn't go down. So when you blow the shofar, you're not supposed to go and bend your head and turn the shofar down. That is not proper. This year, that presents a very big challenge. Because this year, if you look at the guides, the Guide to the Perplexed, the Rambam's Meron Nevuchim, the Corona edition, there are a lot of different ideas being thrown around in society what to do this year for people who are concerned and are taking these concerns seriously and responsibly. And it's no joke. So one of the things that is being mentioned by many Rabbanim is that when you blow the shofar, first they're talking how many koilos should you blow? Do you have to blow all 100? Is it sufficient to blow 30? Maybe if you want to blow more, you can blow 60. Is it really necessary to blow 100 koilos? You are spreading, it could be possibly a spread of disease. There have already been studies that have nothing to do with shofar about musicians, flute players, wind instruments, and an analysis does disease spread through wind instruments, and the results are not very good. So some, if you're in a very small area and you're in a shul, you don't know where the Baal Tokeh has been yesterday. You don't know where he's hanging out. And if you're in a confined space, it might not be such a great idea. You may spread in the air disease. So there are a lot of different ideas being thrown out in society what to do.
Hello?
Okay, maybe we can close the door. Yeah. You want to maybe close the door? We have Baruch Hashem. Everything is getting back to regular. We have a lot of disturbances. We have cell phones that go off. It was so quiet for 5 months. There's mamish a yom tif here today that the cell phones are going off and people in the hall are talking. It's lebedik. This is good news. This is good. The world is getting back. I don't know. The world is taking risks. I shouldn't say the world is getting back to regular. The world is getting back. Someone's blowing shofar. The world is getting back to regular. Okay, in any event, let's continue. So the question is, what should you do? So I've seen in some of the manuals that the Baal Tokeah should take the shofar and should bend it down so that the end of the shofar should not go into the air. It should go into an area where the aerosols will be contained in an area that will not go into the shul. It sounds like a great...
Derech Gidulot is the opposite. It has to be down. Because the top of the shofar
yeah.
is the connection to the head. So it should be... The
no, the shofar connects...
The point is up, Derech Gidulot.
No, the part that you blow in your mouth, that's where it connects to the head. The part that you...
The other way.
No, I gotta go look.
The part of the rabbi is right. What are you saying?
All right, listen.
The narrow part is connected to the head.
Instead of upward, now it's down.
100%. It's, I'm not so sure.
The goal
no,
of,
the wide part is connected to the head, not the narrow
that's
head.
That's right. It's the wide part that's connected to the head. I'm sure.
What?
I don't want to say, but he's right. You're right.
Because when he unogeach with a point, not with
no,
the,
no, that's right. No.
You're right. It's the other way.
We have to go check this out.
No, there's really not much to check out. He's right.
You go on Google and you type in. Go to Google.
The sharp point is up. The end,
are we blowing
to the sharp point?
That's right.
Ram, I typed in.
You take a look on an animal, a picture of an animal.
Yeah.
Picture it in your mind. The point is up.
Yep.
All right. Even though Derech Gidulai, it says in Shulchan Aruch, I see what you're saying. You're right. You're correct. Okay. You're right. You are correct. You're correct. I made a mistake. The ram, the large part, you are correct. Of Kalman is correct. Okay, if you go to Google and you type in ram, type in also ram animal, because if you just type in ram, they're going to show you cars. When you type in ram animal, you will see. However, it's still, although I hear what you're saying, it's down, it's still considered to be up for some, whatever it means. It's still considered when it curls, but the place where it connects into your head,
yes,
into the head, is tilting down.
Yes.
It's tilting down. Okay, fine. But in the manual,
I have a solution.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be up and it should not be down. It should be like the animal goes. The animal goes forward on four. So the point is kadima and ahora. So he should have the point in his mouth and the things like horizontal, a little horizontal. I used to blow the shofar and I know what I used to do. It's not up, but it's to the side.
To the side, right. We're going to talk about that.
The animal goes.
Okay, but. You're correct. If you were to have the shofar exactly the way it's on the animal, then the top of the shofar would be pointing down, slightly down. That is not sufficient. That's the way we blow shofar today, we put it in your mouth. It's true, it doesn't always come up. When you look at a regular shofar, every shofar is a little bit different. But when you put the shofar in your mouth and you blow it, whatever it is, either the end of the shofar, it all depends on your shofar. Sometimes it's sideways, sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. That is called derech gidula. When you take the shofar and you put the shofar in your mouth and you stand erect and you put it in your mouth and you blow the shofar, that's called derech gidula. Okay, the problem is that is not going to satisfy the doctors. The CDC is not satisfied. If you blow the shofar in the ordinary way that we blow shofar, they're not satisfied, because whether the end of your shofar is tipped down or sideways, it's still going into the air. So what's the solution? The solution is bend down, position the shofar in such a way where you're going to make sure it's going to be going into a secluded area downwards, different than what you would ordinarily do. That appears to be problematic in halacha, because that is not called derech gidula. The way you take an ordinary shofar, however it's bent, and you put it in your mouth and you blow it, again, the end of the shofar sometimes will turn down, sometimes will turn sideways, sometimes up. That is called derech gidula, because basically the shofar is horizontal. The shofar is, it's in a basic position that is very similar to the position that it is when it was attached to the animal's head.
It won't help blowing down. How do you rise anyway? And it's going to come up into the higher.
You're right. Anyway. You can't be perfect. There's nothing you can do. When you wear a mask, there's no guarantee either. There's nothing you can do to be perfect. But yes, people call it that Shulchan Aruch. So, but they're telling people a solution is that you should basically manipulate the position of the shofar. Not only should you blow the shofar, whatever, less koilus, position it in such a way where the opening of the shofar will I don't know. It depends on what.
You face the rabbi.
You should manipulate the position where you're going to make sure that it's going to blow towards the ground 100%. Doing that, manipulating it, let's just talk in generalities, let's not say anything definitive, a violation of it's not derech giduloi. No one's going to tell you to take the shofar, take a lulav and shake it upside down. If you take a lulav and esrog and you shake it up, you're not yoytze the mitzvah of lulav. That's one of the techniques. You make the bracha. How do you make the bracha on the esrog? You have to make the bracha over lasiyasan. So what do? Many people, they turn the esrog upside down. How does that solve the problem? If you turn the esrog upside down, it's not derech giduloi. To be yoytze the mitzvah of netilas lulav, you hold the lulav straight. You hold the esrog straight. Everything has to be right side up. If you take the esrog and you turn it upside down and you make the bracha, you're not yoytze. You want to not be yoytze because you want to make the bracha oiver la'asiyasan. Shofar, who would think? Shofar, it's anyway a crooked object. Anyway, it's not straight. This way, that way, every shofar anyway is different. It's right. It's anyway different. But there is a certain basic tzura. And the basic tzura is it's horizontal. You're holding the shofar horizontal. There is the part that goes in your mouth, and there's the part that ends. If you would match it up to the animal, fine. By advising people to manipulate the shofar in such a way in order to avoid spreading germs in the air, you have to take pause. I'm not telling you right, wrong. Wait a minute. If I would take the esrog and turn the esrog upside down, I wouldn't be yoytze the mitzvah.
It's not a health consideration.
But so it doesn't make a difference. It's not a health consideration. You're not yoytze. Let's say you will tell me that Rebbe Chol says it's a health consideration. Let's say there's some type of discovery that there are certain esrogim that give off poisonous fragrance. Poison. But it only gives off the poisonous fragrance if you hold it right side up. If you hold the esrog upside down, making up a whole bab maisa, it doesn't give off poisonous fragrances. So what are you going to tell me? So this year, on Sukkot, hold your esrog upside down. I'm sorry, holding your esrog upside down, you're not yoytze the mitzvah. So therefore, don't do the mitzvah.
Right.
If you can't do it, you can't do it. It's not an excuse. If you can't do the mitzvah, so don't do the mitzvah. But if you're going to do the mitzvah, you have to do it lehalacha. Okay, so Rav Baruch now has a shofar. So Rav Baruch, show us the shofar. Show us the shofar. You put the shofar in the mouth. This particular shofar, that's not the way it was on the animal's head. It was upside down. Turn the shofar upside down. Can you turn the shofar upside down? That's the way it was on the animal's head. Upside down. Yet, now let's, here's the clarity. That's, so you're going to argue that when we blow the shofar, we're doing it shaloi derech gidulosan in general. Because since when we blow the shofar, we're typically blowing the shofar upside down out of the animal. Is that correct? The way you're holding the shofar right now is upside down. Because when it's on the animal's head, it's the other way around. Turn the shofar upside down. If you turn the shofar upside down, then that's the way. So how come no one blows the shofar? You never heard this discussion. I'm assuming because it's not practical to blow the shofar upside down. So you blow, but still, this is Shulchan Aruch, still holding it the way we hold it. You're asking me, you really got me good. You got me in very tough questions. But this is what it says in Shulchan Aruch. The way we hold the shofar, even though when you look at the animal, it is indeed upside down, it's still called derech gidulosan. It's still called derech gidulosan, even though we're holding it upside down. Because I guess Chazal's interpretation of derech gidulosan means it, at least it's horizontal, and you have to be practical to be able to blow it. Blowing it upside down is not going to work well. It's not going to be easy to do. So it's accepted that holding the shofar upside down by a shofar only, it's still called derech gidulosan. The terms, the definition of what's called derech gidulosan by an esrog is not the same standard of what we call derech gidul lasan by a shofar. But it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to hold the shofar in a normal way. If you manipulate the shofar too much, that's not considered to be acceptable, that is not called derech gidul lasan. So this year, when we have an issue, a health issue, and we are being advised to manipulate the position of the shofar, I don't know what the answer is. Since anyway, we're anyway holding the shofar upside down, it is a topic of discussion. Is that a correct approach dealing with blowing shofar? If it comes to a point where we're going to blow the shofar in such a way which is not halachically correct, then just don't blow shofar. If you can't blow shofar because it's a sakana, so you can't blow shofar. Oinis rachmana patre. But if you're going to blow the shofar in unusual ways, which is not a kosher shofar blowing, then it's not. You're not getting credit for the mitzvah. You're not getting credit for the mitzvah. You're making a bracha levatala. So I don't know the answer. You got me. I accept.
May I show it to you?
Yes.
May I show
yes.
it to you?
Yes.
I'm not blowing. I'm just holding.
Holding it.
If I do it like this.
Yes.
Like this, it's exactly derech gidulo. It means horizontal. It's like this.
Horizontal.
And the point goes to my back.
Okay, to your back.
If I bend down a little bit.
Yes.
If I bend down, it's really, it goes up, but still derech gidulo.
It's, so that's the question. That's the big dilemma. The big dilemma is, at what point in time and how are you? Will you be in violation of derech gidul lasan by a shofar? By an esrog, it's simple. You hold the esrog straight. If you turn it upside down, it's no good. A shofar is much, much more complicated. Okay, it's very, and the point, at what point will it be in the world of halacha considered to be not derech gidul lasan? I don't know the answer. I don't think anyone really has clarity in this question. But
Rabbi, as far as safety is concerned, if it's possible in certain Batei Midrashim, I'm just thinking, man, maybe the Baal Tekeah could stand by an open
window. That's what they say. Right. That's
out.
What they say. Exactly. Right. That's a solution. But I'm saying there is a solution. There is a solution. There's no solution for anything. But there are suggestions that have been floated around and been even written up of what the Baal Tekeah should do to minimize risk to other people. And one of the things that has been thrown around is that when the Baal Tekeah blows, he should change the direction of the shofar. Look at the shofar, see where the air is coming out from, and you shall change the direction. Fine. The only thing is, you should be aware that there is a halachic principle called that when you do a mitzvah, the mitzvah, the object shall be positioned, what's called derech gidul lasan. The simplest example to appreciate that is with a lulav and an esrog, because it's a halachic principle. We make the bracha when the esrog is upside down. When the esrog is upside down, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. You make the bracha over le'asyos, and you turn the esrog right side up. Now, shofar. So define for me what is called by a blowing of the shofar derech gidul lasan, and what is called not derech gidul lasan. I don't know the answer. And obviously it's not so simple, because the way most of us blow a shofar to the naked eye is already in the category of not derech gidul lasan. But the fact that in Shulchan Aruch it says that the shofar has to be blown derech gidul lasan, obviously it is called derech. You're blowing it upside down, right? That's called derech. That would appear to be derech gidul lasan.
No,
that appears to be the best way to blow it. The way Mr. Neumann is showing the shofar. What?
Normally I blow it like this.
I know, but that's upside down. Isn't that upside down? The better way is up the other way, the way you had it before. But that's not the minhag. That's not the minhag. The minhag is not. That's not the minhag. So obviously, if that's not the minhag,
tint it to the side.
Horizontal. Horizontal. Right. So obviously, it appears.
Like the animal.
Right.
It
doesn't matter upside down.
A different type of shofar. Talmud doesn't have a bend in his shofar.
But you're supposed to have a bend. You're supposed to have a bend in the shofar.
It's one bend. We have a different type of a
bend. Right. An aisle. The shofars that we're using are not from an aisle. They're from a different animal. It's something similar to an aisle.
Yeah.
All right, so I can tell you. Let's go. I want to move forward. But the something that's very interesting. People mean very well. They mean very well. The CDC means very well. When they issue the guidelines that the shofar should be manipulated in such a way that it will reduce danger, that's a wonderful thing to do, and it's a responsible approach, and it's correct. But you have to also realize that there's a Shulchan Aruch. And in Shulchan Aruch, there's a rule that the shofar has to be blown derech gidul osan. I do not know what the rules are. All I know is that you do something in a normal way, it's called derech gidul osan. When you do things in an abnormal way, there's a problem. And if you do it the shaloi derech gidul osan, then you're not mekayim the mitzvah. So what are you doing in essence? You're wasting your time. You're putting people in danger by anyway spreading the aerosol in the air. Number two, you're making a bracha levatola. Number three, in any way, you're not being yotzei the mitzvah. Now, so you have to really have clarity in this issue of what is called derech gidul osan, in order that you should have a benefit in when you do manipulate the shofar to not bring danger. It should not be an issue. Okay, let's go further.
I want to ask you a question. What is the important here? The sound of the shofar or the holding?
Everything.
But here it's not the likicha of the shofar.
It's the sound.
Chatzotra is also straight ahead and not up.
No, it's not a chatzotra. We don't do chatzotra. That's in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, they have the chatzotra. We blow shofar. Yoim teruah yelochem. We blow only shofar. We blow on Rosh Hashanah shofar. And it's true, it's the sound, l'shmoya. But if the sound is produced electronically, if the sound is produced by a monkey, it's no good. The sound has to be produced by a human being holding a real shofar in the proper way. If it's not held the proper way, it can possibly not be the keem of the mitzvah. What is called not the proper way? I don't know. I honestly don't know. But when you hear guidelines, people telling people to hold the shofar in an abnormal way, that should give you pause. Wait a minute. You mean very well, and you're being very responsible, but you have to know that there are guidelines in halacha, and if the guidelines are being violated, then you're just wasting your time. And not only are you wasting your time, you're putting people in danger for no reason. Okay, another thing. Talk about the sound of the shofar. Now, the sound of the shofar, here's a very interesting topic, and there's a very interesting taz. People are not aware of this taz. It says in the Mishnah, Masechta Rosh Hashanah, if you hear, you have to hear the kol shofar, not a kol havara. Okay, the term is, if you blow in a pit, and if you blow in a bar, you're not yoytzeit. I forgot the exact term because this is my other notes. Let me go to my, this is a different set of notes. Kol havara. You're not yoytzeit the mitzvah. Why not? Because it's not the sound of the shofar. Now the question is, what exactly does that mean? Most of us think, are familiar that it means
like an echo.
An echo. That is what I thought it meant. And that's probably how it's translated in many of the English editions of the Mishnayos and the Gemara. But when you look in the Mefarshim, it's not clear that's what it means. Kol Havara, according to the Taz, pretty much says it very clearly. He says the Kol Havara means, it doesn't mean an echo. In fact, according to the Taz, it can very well be an echo is good. And that would be a very big nafgamina if you can hear it over electronically. Kol Havara says a faint. The way he defines Kol Havara, the Taz, based upon Rashi, other Rishonim, it's a very complicated topic. He learns it means a faint sound. It says in the Gemara, all, and Shulchan Aruch as well, all sounds are okay. Sometimes there's a high-pitched sound. Sometimes it's a deep sound. Everyone blows differently. You can have two people blowing the same shofar. One fellow will produce a high-pitched sound, and one person on this very same shofar will produce a heavy sound, a deep sound, a low-pitched sound. Every person has a different koyach, and every shofar has a different quality, and when you make a shidduch between the person and the shofar, you produce a different type of sound. It says in the Gemara, every sound is good. It doesn't make a difference. Whether it's high-pitched, low-pitched, it doesn't make a difference. The only thing that's no good, number one, it should be consistent, okay? Don't go up and down, it should be straight as possible. The sound should be consistent. And a kol havara is invalid. What does that mean, a kol havara? So some say it means an echo. If you have an echo, you're blowing a shofar, and you're hearing not the primary sound, you're hearing the return sound you're blowing, and you're hearing the sound coming back from the mountains. That's no good. That's one pshat. Others translate, and this is probably the most popular parish, kol havar does not mean an echo. It means a kol mibulbul. Mibulbul is not an echo. Mibulbul means it's not, I don't know how to translate, there's interference. Besides this sound, there's another sound, and another sound that is preventing you from being able to concentrate on this sound. If you're in a bar, someone to learn, Shada, when you're in a pit, there are a lot of sounds happening in the pit because there's an echo. The problem of the echo is not the shofar. It's the interference of other sounds that are happening at the same time that are preventing you from concentrating on the shofar. If you're in a mokoyim where the only sound is the shofar, and the sound that you're hearing may be the echo of the shofar, but it's only the shofar. According to many Rishonim, that's 100% valid. The problem of the shofar in the bar is because in this bar, there's someone talking, and there's someone walking with shoes and making sound, and that sound echoes, and that echo is interfering with your ability to focus solely on the one sound of the shofar. It's not the echo, it's the bilbul. Interesting, this year there's a halacha that I don't think ever was very relevant in the past, and that is when you blow the shofar, it's a very interesting, if you're in a community where there are many shuls, the shuls, listen to this halacha, this is a shocking halacha. You're a community where there are many, all of the shuls should not blow shofar at the same time. Why not? So you would think, it's Kabbalah, right? Everyone, the shofar should go to Shemayim at different times the whole day. No, nothing doing. In olden days, they lived in a very small community. And if you have five shuls all blowing at the same time, when you're sitting in your shul, you can hear the shofar of the shul down the block. Right? If you have five shuls right next to each other, and the walls between the shuls are very thin, when you're sitting in your shul, you hear the shofar of another shul. It happens sometimes. You have multiple minyanim in one shul, you have a hashkam minyan, you have another minyan, and you hear, you're middle of shachris, and you hear them blowing shofar. It's very annoying. You're davening shachris and you hear the shofar from the hashkamim and they're blowing shofar. It's annoying. So certainly, when it's really annoying, when you're blowing shofar and the minion next door is also blowing shofar, so there you're competing. You hear the shofar next door and you hear the shofar in your shul. Which tekiyas are you listening to? You're listening to the tekiyas of your Baal Tekeya, or you're listening to the tekiyas of the Baal Tekeya next door? So don't blow at the same time as another shul in order not to be mebalbel the people. And this year, when probably people will be going in the streets blowing shofar, because a lot of people are not going to shul, and there's going to be a lot of private shofar blowings in the street and in the people's houses, you'll be hearing the shofar the whole day, nonstop. It's inevitable that when someone's blowing shofar in one place, there's going to be someone down the block blowing the shofar at the same time, and you're going to be hearing at the same time two shofar blowings, one right in front of you and one down the block. That's not good. That's not good because that's called bilbul. Bilbul means there's interference. Are you concentrating to this sound or are you concentrating on another sound? Now, there's a third pshat in kol havara, and that is a faint sound. There's just something wrong with the sound. The sound may be a good sound, it may be continuous, but it's faint. How can you define the word faint? I don't know. It's impossible to make that definition. And that's what the Taz says. The Taz learns kol havar means a sound that is faint. And for that reason, he writes all this in the Nitig Avril. I've noticed this, and I never understood why, and I don't think the people themselves know why they're doing this, but it probably comes from their blood, from their great-great-grandparents, that when people, when the Baal Tekeh blows shofar, some people have the custom to go to the Bima, and to stand right by the Baal Tekeh, so they should go deaf when he hears the sound of the shofar. Why are these people running to the Bima to hear the sound of the shofar? You don't hear in the back of the room. I can either hear the shofar. You don't have the greatest hearing to hear the shofar. You can sit in the back of the shul. You can hear the shofar. Fine. What are you running? What are you running to the Bima to hear the shofar? What difference does it make? The value.
Rabbi, there could be another shot in the Kol Havara, hearing aid. Somebody.
No, that's a different. That's a different topic. A different topic entirely. But let's just discuss this. Why is it that people, you find...
You like this one. I look at Ibn Shushan. You know what he says?
Havara?
Look at look. Ibn Shushan.
Yeah.
Look. Kol Havara, kol me'um'am, kol bilti barur.
Bilti barur.
What? Bilti barur.
Bilti barur. It's not clear. That's what the Taz says. That's the Taz. He quotes the Taz? Who does he quote?
Me'um'am.
It's...
Like a
it's not clear. It's not clear. We have always been taught in yeshiva, kol havara means an echo. Stop anyone on the street. Ask them, what is in kol havara? Echo. That's not the pshat. I mean, it's not the only pshat. And in fact, it's not the most popular pshat. It's the most popular pshat in the Rishonim is kol mibulbul. Mibulbul means interference. There are a lot of sounds going on at the same time. When there are other sounds happening at the same time, you cannot concentrate on the intended sound. When you lay in the Megillah, what is the halacha? Two people should not lay in the Megillah at the same time. Trey, kole, loy, mishtame. You cannot hear two voices at the same time. It's one or the other. You can't hear. It's one is ruining it for the other. That's what it means, kol havara. If you're in a place, in a pit, there's an echo. It's not the echo. It's the other sounds. If there's a cricket, if you're in a place where the sound is magnified, so if there's a cricket, if someone steps on the ground, okay, someone walks on the ground, it makes a sound. That sound echoes. It reverberates for maybe 3-4 seconds. That's going to prevent you from hearing the sound that you want to focus on. Because if the sound is reverberating, if there's an echo in the room, it's not that you're hearing the shofar echo. You can, that's fine. If you're listening to the shofar and the only sound in the room is the shofar, even if you're hearing the echo of the shofar, it's fine. That's perfectly fine. The problem of the bar is, it's not the only, every sound in the bar reverberates for 5 seconds. Goes back and forth. So when you're trying to listen to one sound, you're still dealing with all of the sounds of nature for the last 5 seconds. It's mabulbul. You can't hear a clear sound. That's the most popular pshat. But there's another pshat, and that is a faint sound. And this explains the meaning that people do. They don't even know why they're doing it. People, they run to the bima. They run to the bima to listen to the kol shofar. Excuse me, the shofar is very loud. The Baal Tekeh has a very powerful voice, and he has a very good shofar, and if you go even outside the shul, you can hear the shofar very clearly. So what are you running to the bima? You don't seem to have a problem with hearing. You're a young guy. You don't have any hearing issue. What are you running to the bima? What are you running? The answer is the Taz. The Taz says, just because you can hear the sound, I can hear the sound, but there's a quality to the sound. If the sound is weak, then you're not yoytze. That's called cold havara. So when the sound is, it's not a matter of hearing the sound, it's a matter of hearing the strength of the sound. So when you're close up, you're gonna hear the sound as good as it gets. It takes away from the element of hearing, of faintness. These are terms which we need to bring in an expert on sound. There are people out there that specialize in sound systems, in stereo systems. This is what they do the whole day. And to me, I don't know. To me, it's all the same. I'm not such a, I'm a funuk when it comes to all the different types of stuff. To me, it's like people, these kind of sewers and wine. To me, they buy this stereo system and that surround sound. I don't know, once you get to the point where you can hear clearly the mufunakim, but there are people that are mumchim in this and they can explain to you the difference in what it means kol havara. This is their holiday. The people who work in a B&H, this is their holiday. Because you go to B&H, they'll sit with you and they can tell you the difference between this sound system, which cost $10,000. You want to go put it in your home, a home theater system, sound system. So you can buy two systems. You can buy an Amazon for $13, next day delivery, or you can go to B&H and pay $5,000. To me, they both sound exactly the same. I can't tell the difference between the one for $13 and the one they sell you in B&H for $5,000. But the guy who works in B&H can give you an explanation for a whole day, explaining in minute detail the difference between the two and the quality of the sound. That's this fellow in B&H that does this the whole day, Rosh Hashanah is his holiday. Because in Rosh Hashanah it says that a kol havaro lo yatsa. And he is qualified to explain to you what it means, a kol havara, l'chol pirotecha v'diktukecha v'chavanoseha hatuluyim ba. Because the kol havara, you can open up the Taz, open up Rashi, open up the Meiri, open up Tosfos, and look how they define kol havara, and nobody says the same thing. Everyone is talking a different language. And most of us, when we read this, we have no idea what they're talking about. Kol mebulbol. Sometimes it sounds like it's talking about an echo, and then the first, no, it doesn't mean an echo, it means this, it means that, it means a faintness. It's a very complicated topic of what it means kol havar. To make matters more complicated this year, because this year in the manuals, the Guide to the Perplexed, in the Sefer Mura Nevuchim LeKorona, it says that you should cover the shofar with a mask. Okay, that's another solution. And all of the experts will tell you there's nothing wrong. It doesn't sound any different. You cannot detect any difference in cover when you cover the shofar with the mask than if you would not cover the end with the mask. It sounds exactly the same. So you yotze the mitzvah and you're not putting anyone in danger. And if that's what the Rabbanim paskin, I'm all for it. I have no problem with it. But I just want to point out is I have no doubt in my mind you're going to have mifunakim out there who are going to go open up the Shulchan Aruch and say, it says a kol havara lo yatsa. And they're going to go give you 20 different perushim of what it means kol havara. And there's going to be someone that's going to tell you that if you put a mask on the shofar, even though to you it sounds the same, but no, that makes it into a kol havara. And they'll cite you chapter and verse and explain to you these fine nuances and sound, which to me, I don't understand the difference. You're talking to a wall, talk to me. But Enoch and Ami, I have respect for these people because indeed, you see in the Rishonim, there is a very big topic of discussion as to properly define kol havara. And if you put a mask on the shofar, maybe you're right. It sounds to someone like me all the same, but people who are skilled and trained in sound, and there's an industry, you can't say that it's butler daito eitzel kol adam, because there's a multi-million, if not a multi-billion dollar industry in sound, in quality sound in this world, in every computer. I mean, there's no sheer to I mean, the business is just an enormous business. So obviously there's something to it. And there are people that are professionals and they understand these things. And if you're going to go look in the Rishonim and see how they define kol havara, and you want to translate that into a difference between when the shofar is covered versus when the shofar is not covered directly at the end of the shofar, you know something? Maybe these people know something that I don't know. So I have respect for them. If the Rabbanim say it's okay, that's good enough for me. I don't have any problem. But I also have respect for the people that say that the other Rabbanim, there are, you know, there's a lot of different, everything, as you know, I don't have to tell you, everything is a mamish, a machlekes, many different shades and varieties. There are more flavors of halacha in these matters than there are in Baskins and Robbins of ice cream in these matters. So, and everyone has legit, everyone has what to be samech on. And when you learn the sugi of Kol Havara and you see already that there's so many perushim, what it means Kol Havara, you know something? These people may actually know, they may actually know something. And if they appreciate it, good for them. Have respect for them. And don't make litzanus of their opinion that it might not be the best thing to cover the shofar with material. It might be a shayla in their opinion.
The mask is like a bar.
Why is it a bar?
Because it changes a little bit.
Ah, so what? Right. So you have to understand. So we have to understand what's the problem. Mitoich habar. That's the big dilemma. What I always thought mitoich habar means an echo.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. There's no echo when you put a mask on a shofar. I don't think anyone's going to tell you that putting a mask on a shofar creates an echo. It doesn't create an echo. So what are you talking about? How can you go say it's like blowing mitoich habar? No, you don't know pshat in the Gemara. It doesn't say in the Mishnah that it's an echo. Read what it says in Rashi. Look what it says in the Taz. Look what it says in Tosis. Look what it says in the Meiri. Whoever told you that the translation is echo, that's a simple, simplified translation. It means kol mubulbul. It means a call that is faint. It means this, it means that. You got to talk to the experts of what it means in the Mishnah. And then when you know in the Mishnah, then you're first qualified to speak about what effect it has when you cover the shofar. Everything, nothing is simple. And the goal is, whatever, just follow the rules. Whatever. The other people who make the decisions, these are Rabbanim, and we put our faith in them, and they ask the same questions that we ask, and they make halachic decisions. And whatever they decide is fine with me. If I go to the shul and they're going to blow with the cover over the shofar, I have no problem with it. And if I go to the shul and they don't have a cover over the shofar, I also have no problem. Whatever the rabbi wants to do is fine. I understand that these are very complicated issues, and everything is based upon halacha and science and the reality of the situation that we're dealing with. How you hold the shofar, the whole issue this year, you're going to see people are going to be doing funny things. They're going to be bending down in abnormal ways. Is that a violation of halacha? I don't know. I have no idea. If you put a mask on the shofar, do you change the sound? Is that a violation of halacha? I don't know. But you see, just from what we're learning over here, that there's something to talk about. There's a conversation to be had before you reach a halacha conclusion. Okay, now let's talk about something which I don't think is so controversial, at least this year, and that is, just in general, I always found this to be very interesting. Where do you put the shofar? The professional blowers, do you put it on the right side of your mouth? Do you put it on the left side of your mouth? Or do you put it in the center of your mouth? So the truth is, they're all valid. It appears that most, the minig is the right side. If I'm not mistaken, is that the common minig? Why? Because it says, Hasatan, first of all, min hametzar karasi ka, from the straits. So the meitzar is interpreted to me from the corner, from the edge. You blow the shofar from the meitzar from the narrowest part of your mouth, which means the corner of your mouth. Now, if you're going to do from the corner of your mouth, you have a choice, right, left. Which one should you use? So some say the right, because the right's more choshev. Or, because it says in the pasuk, ha-satan oimed liyamini. The satan is always on the right side. So you want to get rid of him. Get rid of him. The way you get rid of him is you put the shofar in his place. He has no place to stand. If he's on the right side and you occupy his space, he has nowhere to have a seat. Could you imagine the satan, he comes to shul and the gabbai says, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't pay membership dues this year. You don't have a seat. Leave the shul. What is the satan doing in shul? Every shul has a policy, you have to pay for your seat. The satan never paid for the seat. What's he doing there? So you get rid of him. The best way to get rid of him is to sit in his seat. How do you put the shofar on the right side? Because that's satan oimei liyaminoi. And then some will tell you, no. Don't put the shofar on the right side. It doesn't say. It says min hametzar, from the narrow side. You don't want to chepa with the satan. don't start up with him. If you don't bother him, he won't bother you. He's on the right side. Just ignore him. You go to the left side. Don't antagonize him. If you're going to go sit in his seat, it's going to be an ugly fight. So put the shofar on the left side and just ignore. The best way to deal with the satan is to ignore him. So some will tell you, I'll pick Kabbalah, the left side. And there are many people that do this for sure. There are many people that put a bedavka on the left side. Now I got a really good question for you. What about if you're a lefty? Itter yad. If you're a lefty, do you do it with on the left side or the right side? Big machlokes. Go bustle your left, your right. Are you public property? It's for the shul, the covenant of the tzibur. So it's the tzibur's right, the tzibur's left. Is it your preference? Where? And then there are people, there are many gedolei Yisrael who blew shofar. You know how they blew shofar? Right in the middle. Right in the middle. Why? That's how you blow a trumpet. Trumpet players, how do they blow trumpets? Go to a wedding and watch how they blow the wind instruments. It's always in the center. The goyim, but they don't know. They don't know how to blow. If the goyim blow in the middle, when they blow their flutes and their wind instruments, and they put their musical instruments in the center, it must be for a good reason, because that's where you have maximum control. That's where you're able to maneuver the sound and produce a high quality sound. Isn't that the ikar? The ikar is l'shmoya koil shofar. It shouldn't be a kol mabulbul. It shouldn't be a faint sound. You want to have a good quality sound. And if a ruba deruba, most people will tell you that if you blow the shofar right in the middle of your mouth, you're able to produce a good, steady, strong, quality sound, then it's not necessary to get involved in Yoni Kabbalah of Hasatan Omer Liyamini, or to stay away from the Satan, Min Hametzar Karasi Kol. That's just a remez. That's not an Iker Hadin that you should do. These are Hechara in Yonim. So when everything is the same anyway, when a person is such a professional and it doesn't make a difference, matoiv umanoim to be mekayim the hidurim, to do it from the side of the mouth, the right side, the left side. But when you're not holding there and it's a struggle to get the tekiyas out, and you could do a much better job, and you're the best the shul got, and the shul wants a person who's a yari shemai matalmu chacham, someone that they know, someone that cares about them, part of the member of the kehila. And he likes to blow from the middle of the mouth. Gesundheit. I remember when I was a child, I didn't really know anything about shofar. I really knew nothing. It was always the first to blow in our shul. And then the year came where he couldn't blow anymore. He stopped blowing. So they were looking for new candidates. So I don't know why. I always thought that you blow from the side of the mouth, from the side. I don't know, the right side. That's what I always pictured in my mind. Not that I ever saw it. Because I don't sit by the beam. I don't really see what's going on, clearly what's going on. And then, they needed a shul, a new belt. So the fellow came, candidate. So someone came to my father. He was going to be the Baal Tokeya, and he wanted to practice to show my father that he knows how to blow, and that he's a good Baal Tokeya. So I was just happened to be at home, and the fellow came, and he took out the shofar and he started blowing. And he put the shofar right smack in the mouth, in the middle, in the center. And he started blowing. And I was like shocked. I was shocked, like, you can't do that. I was like a little kid. You're supposed to blow from the side of the mouth. So at least I was smart enough to keep my mouth shut. At least that I was smart enough. But when he left, I said to my father, he doesn't know he's blowing from the middle of his mouth. He's supposed to blow from the side. This guy is DOA. This guy can't blow, be the Baal Tokeya and Shul. You can't do that. You can't blow in the middle of the mouth. So my father called me and says, listen, it's true, there's a minute to blow. It's not ma'akeva kihuzeh. If this is how he feels comfortable to blow, he can blow. And in fact, I found this here when I was preparing. There were many gedolei Yisrael who blew from the middle of the mouth. Gedolei Yisrael had no problem blowing from the middle of the mouth. It's true, b'nametzah korosikah, everyone's going to pride themselves in blowing from the side. But this is something which is not ma'akev. So basically, whatever you do is good. Either the right side, min ha-meitzar, the right side, because a satan amili minoi, the left side, you don't want to start up with the satan, put faker, get away from the satan. If you're a lefty, then you got a whole dilemma. Do you go follow your right, your left, the tzibah's right, the tzibah's left, which is a whole big dilemma in of itself. And then you get to the issue of who says blowing, maybe blowing the center. You blow in the center is also good. And then kachava, that's taka the minig by many gedolei yisrael to blow in the center. This is not an issue. Now, by the way, you hold the shofar in your right hand, okay? And the shofar, if you're a lefty, there's a whole shaila. It doesn't, just because you're a righty or a lefty, it has nothing to do with tzar the mouth. You can be a righty and hold it and put it on the left side. A lefty, it doesn't matter which hand you're holding it in. It doesn't matter positioning it. So, but you're supposed to, you hold in the right hand. The Yad Yamin, if you're a lefty, the machloikis, do you hold in your right hand or do you hold in your left hand if you're a lefty? And the size, the shofar, you don't have this problem today. It has to be at least the size, the machloikis, two opinions. One hold should be a drop more than a tefach, which means the shofar has to fit in your hand. Your hand is a tefach, and a little bit of the shofar should come out on one side and a little bit on the other side. The second opinion holds that it should be three tefachim. The tefach in your hand, and a whole tefach here, and a whole tefach there. That's not a problem today. There's no shofar today that anyone's going to use in shul that's not going to be at least three tefachim. That's not an issue. If there's a hole in the shofar, it happens often, you find it often, there's a hole in the shofar. That's a problem. It's not necessarily possible. It doesn't automatically disqualify the shofar. If you fill up the hole, that's the problem. If the hole has been filled up with material, that can be a problem. Okay, it's all, when this gets to the whole top, whatever it is. If there's a crack, that's very, happens. If there is a vertical crack, finished. If there's a crack that goes along the length of the shofar, along the length of the shofar, forget it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. There are too many problems when it's kosher, it's not kosher. Basically, today, you're not going to play around. Baruch Hashem, we live in an affluent society. A shofar, the price of a shofar, the average shofar goes between $30 and $150. Okay, if you go to any Judaica store, you're not going to pay for a shofar you're going to use in shul. Anywhere, the prices are between $30 and $150, not more than that. If you want to go into the black market, you go to a specialist. There are definitely people who are specialists who make shofars. I don't know if they have in America, there are so many people in Eretz Yisrael, there are certain people that are known to be these, if you want to get a really good shofar, there are certain people, could be they'll charge a good $200-$300 for a really exotic, high quality shofar. But I've always seen that you get a shofar for mill range between $70, $80, you can get really, really good stuff. You can get a shofar. Every you have to get it early. You have to go, if you want to buy a shofar, you should go early. If you go Erev Hashanah, there's nothing left. Erev Hashanah, the only things that are left are the shofars that are very hard to blow. There's a mazel. It's a mazel. Some shofars, it goes. Some don't go. I would imagine this year, see the problem is you go to a store to buy a shofar. How are you going to test it this year? You go to a Judaica store, and a lot of the professionals, they go to a Judaica store. They don't care. They don't go to professionals. There are people. They are mumchim. They are special mumchim. But most people are not into going to mumchim. They just go to Eichler's. They'll go to Ferristan. They'll go to a Judaica store, wherever, and they'll have a bit of a box. They get a new shipment, and they'll say, go to the back, or go over here, and don't give everyone a headache in the store, and go play with them, and find for yourself a shofar that you like. Fine, this year, you're not going to do that. Because this year, it's already too late by now, but this year, germs. No one's going to take a shofar and put their mouth to a shofar. You do not know who was the person who put this shofar on your mouth. Even if you're going to clean it with Purell, you're not going to do it. Right? You're not going to do it. Exactly. So this year, I don't really know how people purchase shofars. And this year, there's a need for a lot of shofars. Because this year a lot of people are not going to shul and people are getting a lot of private blowings. This year probably was a very good year to be in the business. There probably a lot of sales of shofars this year because of the proliferation of minyanim and private blowings that will take place, even though it's only one day Rosh Hashanah. But But if there's a crack, a vertical crack, forget it. If there's a hole, it depends. Usually a hole does not pass the shofar. Usually does not. Unless it changes the sound, which almost never. And unless you fill it up with material that's not ideal, that could be a problem. But if you don't fill up the hole, you leave the hole the way it is, and it's not in the part where you're blowing, it's okay. I'll tell you one interesting thing. This reminded me of a story. Question. Is a shofar a chefza de mitzvah? Does it have sanctity? I'll give you this story. It shook me up, this story. This story to me is a very disturbing story. But when I learned the laws of shofar, I was reminded of the story. Recently, Rabbi Rav Keller from Chicago, Tel Chicago, passed away. Very recently, I don't think it's the Shloshim yet. So they wrote him up. They wrote up articles in all the newspapers, the magazines. They wrote it like Hespedim. So one of the things that I read, he was the Rebbe, he was in Tel Chicago, he was the Rosh Shiva, and they hired in the high school English teachers. And I remember, many of the English teachers are not Jewish. You get a teacher, then they come from public school. After public school is over, they make some extra money, they come and they teach, and they teach Limudei Chol in the yeshiva. And I remember this to be very true. Many of our teachers were not Jewish, or they were Jewish, not religious. And the yeshiva, I remember when I went to yeshiva, was very makpid. They told the people who worked in the yeshiva, we want you to wear a yarmulke. Even though you're not Jewish, doesn't matter. It's just a uniform. In the yeshiva, we want you, when you teach, we want you to wear a head covering. Interesting, and I'm trying to think back, did all of my English teachers wear head coverings? I don't remember, but definitely many of them did. And they were certainly not religious, or they were not Jewish. All right? So Rabbi Keller was very makpid. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Tel Chicago, and he hired English teachers, and he insisted that you have to wear yarmulke in the classroom when you teach Limudei Chol. There was one teacher who refused to wear a goy, a non-Jew. He refused. Under no condition will he wear a head covering. So they told Rabbi Keller, the Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, I want to speak to him. Took him into the office, and he said, why don't you want to wear it? So he says, it's a hypocrite. Hypocritical to wear. It's hypocritical to wear a yarmulke. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Jewish. There's no need. Oh, I'm coming in, he's going to go put on a kippah? It's crazy. It's ridiculous. It's hypocritical. What are you telling me to wear head covering for? I'm not going to wear a religious symbol. I'm not Jewish. So he said to him, there's nothing to do. Rabbi Keller, this is what it says in the article. And it's interesting because that's not the way I thought. I would imagine that it is a religious symbol. That's what I mean, my little mind. I don't know anything. So Rabbi Keller said, no. It's not a religious symbol. It's just a dress code. It's just, you know... I think it was a very short article, so I can't get the depth of what he was trying to say to him. It's not a religious symbol. Putting a yarmulke on your head does not mean you're Jewish. It's not a bris milah, it's not tefillin, it's not a religious symbol. It's just a dress code here in the school. We want the boys to see everyone, the little boys, so we want them to see everyone that's here is wearing a head covering. And the guy didn't believe him. The guy said, Don't give me this business. Don't tell me this. It's not a religious symbol. It is a religious symbol. It's hypocritical. So it says in this article, of Keller, Rashi of Tel Chicago, he took off his yarmulke, he threw it on the floor, and stepped on it. And he says, you see, I'm telling you the truth. It's not a religious symbol. Look, would I go step and trample upon a religious object? He took off his own yarmulke, Rabbi Keller. It's hard to believe the story. Rabbi Baruch is making a face. Hard to believe the story, right? It's hard to believe the story. I know. Shocking. It's not a religious symbol. He took off his yarmulke, threw it on the floor, stepped on it, trampled. It's not. It's just a dress code. That's all it is. We're Jews. We fear God. And the way we show we fear God, we cover our head. It's not a religious symbol. It doesn't mean anything. And if I can step on it, you can put it on your head when you walk into the classroom and teach these boys. It doesn't say the end of the story. It doesn't say what happened at the end if the guy listened. But why am I telling you the story? When I was preparing the Hilchos Shofar, there's a very big discussion. Is a shofar a religious symbol? Is it a religious object? Does it have sanctity? Tzitzis. Are tzitzis a religious? Yes, they are. There's no question about it. Tashmishei mitzvah. Is a shofar like a tzitzis? It appears not. It appears that the vast majority of the opinion hold a shofar is like a yarmulke. It's nothing. That's what it seems. Maybe I'm saying wrong, but the impression that I'm getting requires more study. The impression that I get is a shofar is just like a yarmulke. And just like Rabbi Keller can go at Kadekach, can take off his yarmulke and throw it on the floor and trample upon it, a shofar is nothing. It's like a trumpet. It's just a horn of an animal. It means it's tzitzis, at least tzitzis. Tzitzis, you make them l'shma, l'shem, mitzvahs, tzitzis. You have to twirl it and this number of things. There's a sanctity. It's not called kedusha. It's called a holiness of a mitzvah. But a shofar doesn't even have that. It's just cartilage of an animal. Happens to be, it has to be a kosher animal. All right, so it has to be a kosher animal. But it's just cartilage, and you put it to your mouth, and you produce a sound. The mitzvah is the sound. The mitzvah is not the object. Okay, that's a very important principle. It changes your, it changed the whole approach to the mitzvah. The approach to the mitzvah is, you're here on the holiest day of the year, you hear your life is on the line, and you're blowing the shofar is nothing. It's shocking almost. You're under the talis, the Baal Tokeh, suddenly they go to mikvah, they get all worked up, all super hyped up, especially in the yeshivas. You go to the Haredi yeshivas, they're all like really psyched out. And what are you holding in your hand? Nothing, mamish nothing. You can take it, you can throw it on the floor, you can step on it, nothing. But yet, from this nothing, you're producing the purest sound, the purest sound. Ki'ilu, you entered lifnai v'lifnim, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You've come in lifnai v'lifnim. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, the contrast between the object you're using to the result that you're achieving. You're achieving a result of chayim, Chaim of Kedusha with an object that amounts to nothing. It's unbelievable. That's the Koyach of Rosh Hashanah. All right, we're going to stop here. We'll continue Mishnah tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for coming. Be well. All the best.
Why is
young Israel looking for the Baal Tokeh?
The Vesikin Minyan?
Oh.
It says that, you know, Rav Shulman, he's looking for a Baal Tokeh, the Vesikin Minyan, one of the Minyanim, they do Baal Tokeh. They have a lot of Minyanim, you know, they have many Minyanim. Many Minyanim.
Anybody catching anything
from the
shofar blowing? It's all over.
Over, yeah.
Okay,
you like
my Sundays.
You blow it, you
Sundays.
Own it.
Put that in your, put that on Friday. No, only politics?
It's a re-reported show. That's the reform they said. And conservatives, they're having some conservative rabbis, they're having a drive-by in the parking lot.
Why can't you use a trumpet in the reform?
You want to hear a show.
What?
You can have it pre-recorded.
This shit does not go past McDonald Avenue.
Outside of New York, New York, this is very, very serious. Chicago, they're dead serious. In Chicago, in Baltimore, in anywhere outside of Brooklyn and Lakewood, it's a different world. I have Bubba the Hasidim, who live in Chicago. And the Yav is in the Kollel, in the Yeshiva. I was speaking to my aunt, the takanas are just like in the Young Israel, like in the Young Israel over here, with the most serious warnings. No violators are tolerated, and this is in the same type of people that you would find in Lakewood and in Bar Park. Right. The same people, the same exact type of people, but in these communities, that's how it is. No ands, if, or buts. In Flatbush and Bar Park, and really in Bar Park and Lakewood, it's a different world. Flatbush is a mix. Flatbush is a very, very big mix. Flatbush is not like Bar Park. Flatbush, even during the week, they're very, very lean. But on Shabbos, I've seen a lot of the shuls. I found a lot of the shuls on Shabbos are very, very accommodating to the individuals that are afraid. I wonder what's going to be where I don't know where I'm at. What are they doing, Chaim Berlin? They don't know what they're doing. They're scratching their heads. I'm sure in Bar Park they're not scratching their heads. They have a regular diet where they couldn't get less. Chaim Berlin, they're scratching their heads because they know they can't. They know they just can't ignore. They can't ignore everything. They can't because there are people who want to come daven, older people, and will not come unless they're safe, and they feel a full duty and obligation to make sure that they are safe, and they're dealing with the majority of people that are not interested, but yet the majority of people who are not interested are still very much willing to go out of their way to accommodate those people who are concerned. You don't have that outside of Flatbush. Flatbush is unique in that respect, in that it's a big mix, and the people who are very, very, very liberal are still very much willing to go out of their way to accommodate those that want to be responsible. In Bar Park, you don't have that. Lakewood, you don't have that. Lakewood, it's one size fits all. Bar Park, it's one size fits all. There's no accommodations. It's my way or the highway. In Flatbush, it's much more accommodating. But the Hamoinam in Flatbush, I don't know, not is pretty much had it. They've had it. You see, yesterday was the first day of school for a lot of the schools. There was a lot going on yesterday. A lot going on. A lot of confusion.
Hey, in YRNJ, in North Jersey, they put up, I mean, the